Okay, we are continuing on with the last of the SQL. So we're going to continue looking at these things. We looked at indexes and Oracle, the introductory thing, last time. More on primary and foreign keys is simply setting up keys, and that's what I'm asking you to do as your homework assignment. Is I'm going to ask you to create some tables and set up some keys. So I have created this table, or I've had it for a while. Now I'm saying I want to alter it, and I want to add a constraint, which is named, I'm naming it, item number underscore PK. Okay, so I'm naming it that. And I need this thing to take a picture. Okay, and I'm saying I am creating the primary key. It is going to be on item number. Okay, so as soon as I've done that, it now shows up as not null. Because primary keys cannot be null. Okay, they also have to be unique. But what they don't happen to notice is that they put that in there, but they've also made it unique. Okay, so I cannot add a second primary key. So when I'm creating the primary key, I can choose to give it a constraint. And that means that when I go and look things up, the constraint name will be there, but it's my choice. I could have just said, add a primary key. I could also have done this when I created the table. So I could put in the primary key as I'm creating the table. So I have that choice either way. Okay. So I made the primary key for the inventory table. And now I'm going down and saying I want to see it. So, okay. Good. Okay, so now I'm saying select asterisks from user constraints where the table name is inventory PK. And it comes out and shows me that I have an item number PK. Okay, that the owner is Scott, because as I said, when I set this up, I set it up as Scott and Tiger. Okay. Now, on the second one, I said I just want to see the table name and the constraint name. And so it comes and gives me just those two. What the constraint name does for me is that I can then look at my list of things in the user table, and I can come up with what have I created, what have I gotten, all that sort of thing. So it just tells me that I have a constraint, and because I'm capital and name the constraint to describe what it is, that it's an item number PK for primary key, then I know that I've created a primary key for that table. Okay, so if I don't know whether I've done it or not, I can go back in and look. And if I don't know whether I've set up other constraints, I can go back in and look. So this lets me see the constraints that I've set up. Okay, and that's the main purpose for putting a constraint name in. Okay, then I had a department table, and I went in and I said, alter the table department, added a constraint department PK, and it is a primary key constraint, and it's on department number. So I've now created the department number. Okay, so then I put in a bunch of departments. Okay, so now that the department has a primary key, I can go back and establish a foreign key into the inventory table. Because the inventory table had a field called department. and now I can establish a foreign key into it. But I couldn't establish foreign key into it until I had set up the table with the department. In other words, I can't establish a foreign key into a table that I imagine I'm going to plan to set up. I have to actually have it set up, okay? It won't let me establish a foreign key until I have both tables set up. So I said, add a constraint, and again, constraint is optional. Add a constraint, department inventory foreign key. And it's a foreign key on department. Okay, so I'm altering the inventory table. The inventory table has a department on it. So I'm saying set up a foreign key on this department field in the inventory table, reference into the department table. So it references into the department table and references to the primary key in the department table. Okay? You always establish a foreign key to go into a primary key, to reference into a primary key. Okay, so I've got this field called department in the inventory table someplace. And what I'm doing is saying, take that field called department that is on the inventory table and link it to the field that is the primary key on the department table. Link it to the field that's the primary key on the department table. So I always link to a primary key. Questions? Okay. And then if I want to see them, I can select the information and I am getting the names. So the things that I have set up, I can see are on the inventory table, I have an item number as a primary key, and I have a department inventory foreign key. And on the department table, I have a department primary key. Department is linking in to the department primary key. And then I went in and I tried to put in a name into the inventory, and let's see. I don't remember what the inventory table is, so I'm going to go back and look. Department is the third from the last thing, okay? So if I look at my inventory table, department is the third from the last. Okay. I set up a BK, an SP, and a TY in my department table. So those are the only things that I can link to. BK, SP, and TY. So I came down here, and the third one in from the back is a BO. So a BO doesn't work because that's not one of the things that I have in the department table. And so that's why it gave me an error. Okay. So if I go back here and add a BO into the department table, then that would work. But I didn't have a BO in the department table. Okay. So now where am I? Okay, so I added a constraint. I took my inventory customer table now, and I made a key for that. And I altered the table sales rep. And I made a primary key for that. And now I can establish the link. Okay, and this one is important because I have sales rep on here, but down here, you remember, oh no, I called it sales rep, but I got an A in it.
This was the one where I didn't call them the same name when I did it. But it works fine because I links into the primary key.
So I said, okay, here's the name I'm going to give the foreign key. It's a foreign key for sales rep. Okay, so the foreign key of sales rep is going to link into this table. Okay, so I am saying references is referring to the table name. And it's going to link to that field on the table.
Okay, so references is the table name, and it links to the primary key on the table. Yes, no, maybe? And then I came down, and I've got an order table. All the table orders, and I added a primary key. And then I went down to order line at some point. And the order line has a two-part key, okay? It can't have a primary key of just the order number. It has a two-part. It has order number and item number. So I can create the primary key, and I put the two things in there. That this is the key based on the combination of those two fields. Yeah?
You can put one of those
two. Yes.
There,
you can have three or four or whatever you need. But what that does is it says this combination. Okay, so it's the combination is the primary key. And lots of times there are tables that you can't come up with one key.
Now, there are people, and I happen to not be one of those, that just figure that they want to always have a unique key, just one field, and so they make up a number to use as the primary key. And to me, that's just one more ID that has no meaning that I'm supposed to remember. So I think it makes a lot more sense to have the primary key, a combination of the order number and the item number. But every once in a while, when I'm reading an article or something, I'll run into somebody that just doesn't like combined primary keys. And so they make up a number that will serve as the primary key. But then that's, as I said, one more number you got to remember that has no meaning other than that. And so I disagree with that, but that and a quarter buys me a cup of coffee. No, not anymore. So notice that when I do that, it says not null on both of those fields because it's now recognizing that those fields can't be null because they make up the primary key. Okay. So now I can come up with order line.
And what I'm doing here on order line is I'm saying alter the table order line, add a constraint. It's a foreign key based on order number, and it references the orders table. So the order number is a foreign key based on orders, and it will go in and find the order. And then I set up a second primary key, item number, which references in the inventory.
Okay. So I can have the two parts.
Each part is referencing into a different table. So order number, which is up here, is referencing into the orders table. And item number, which is also up here, is referencing into the inventory table. Okay? So the orders table has a primary key of order number, And the inventory table has a primary key of item number. So it is referencing into those two primary keys. Okay? So my order number is referencing into the orders table based on order number. And the item number is referencing in to the inventory table based on item number. And it works. Questions?
I didn't understand this the first time somebody explained it to me, so there should be questions. Okay, then you're all smarter than I was. I had to have it explained to me more than once. I think some of you don't understand. I gotta believe that. So this one is just trying to find something. I tried to add an order that doesn't have an order number. Okay, so it violated the key because I'm trying to insert something that didn't have the right information. So I had a 2222 there, actually item number, and when I changed it to a 111, it worked. And I think that these are mainly just testing and seeing that they don't come up. Okay, so all those are just testing. Okay, so what I want to look at now is what I'm asking you to do for homework and try to basically develop these two. So if you bring up the homework...
The first one, I'm doing an oil company table. And this is a very, very simple setup.
Not probably something that would have to have a lot of changes to it to become reality. So I've got an oil company, and I've got customers. And I am basing things on my customer. So in my oil company, no customer can have two houses, okay? So that's why we're very basic here. In my oil company, no customer can have two houses. And I could have had a house code instead of a customer code, but I've got a customer code here. A house code would have added a more level of complexity. So my customer has a customer ID, a name, an address, the capacity of their tank, and the house type code. Okay. Then for each house type code, I want to carry some information like the average summer, fall, winter, and spring use. And this would be true. The oil company, I'm assuming, has a whole load of algorithms that tell them when they should make their next delivery to me. And one of them is based on my history, but I think others are probably based on, you know, the fact that the average 9-room house has this, the average 8-room house has this, the average, and that sort of thing. So I said I wanted to carry the summer, fall, winter, and spring average use. And then I want delivery information for the year, including the date of delivery, the number of gallons delivery, the price per gallon, and the customer it was delivered to. So, first of all, I can't carry all this information on one table. I've got to have multiple tables. What do you see there for the tables that I need? I clearly need a customer table. Okay? So I'm going to have a customer table, and basically the customer table is going to carry all of that information. Okay, the ID number, the name, the address, the capacity of the tank, and the house type code. Okay, and I can have whatever code I have. You know, one of the codes might be a good one, might be, you know, 5-room, 6-room, 7-room, etc., like that. Whatever you want to carry as the house type code. Okay, so what's the next table that I need? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to carry, and that one is going to have as its key. Okay, let me back up. What's the key on the customer table? The primary key is the customer ID. What's going to be the key on this, whatever you want to call it, season table is fine. Whatever, what's going to be the primary key on that? Read the sentence there. For each house type code, you need to carry, yeah.
The house code?
Yep. So I'm going to have the house type code, and that's going to be the primary key. And then what else am I going to have on there?
Dates.
The date, well, not as much dates as I want to know the average summer usage. So I'm going to have average summer for that house type, and let's say I put in for that house type 5-room house. I want to know the average summer, etc. So I'm going to put in the average summer, the average fall, the average winter, and the average spring. Okay, so that I have the average use of 5-room house. The average summer is they use this many gallons. The average winter is they use that many gallons. The average, and so if you have a 5-room house, that's part of my algorithm to figure out when to deliver to you next. Okay? Part of my algorithm obviously is also going to be your history. You know, some people keep the heat low, some people keep the heat high, and that usually is a history situation. Okay? Then what is the next table that I'm going to need?
Delivery table.
A delivery table. Okay, and what is going to be the primary key on that? Well, actually, let's first go into what's going to be in it. What's going to be on the delivery table?
Customer ID.
Customer ID. What else?
Date of delivery.
Yep.
Number of gallons. Price per gallon.
Date. There we go. Delivery. D-I-L-I-V. No, D-E-L. I can't spell. Date of the delivery. And what did you say? Number of gallons. And then I decided to have the price per gallon that it is when they do a delivery. Because oil tends to change, the price per gallon tends to change a lot, and I'm going to send out the bill a while after I make the delivery. I want to know what the price was the date I made the delivery, not the price the date I'm sending out the bill. Okay. When I get my oil sheet, it says the price, actually, the price per gallon is actually when the guy delivers it. He leaves me a carbon of what he delivered, and it includes the price per gallon that I'm going to be charged. Okay, so what's the primary key on the delivery?
Customer ID.
Pardon me?
Customer ID.
Not by itself. Because then I could only make one delivery to the person.
Customer
ID. Yeah. I got to have the two of these as the primary key, the customer ID and the delivery date, because I want to keep a history of their deliveries. And so I am going to have the customer ID and the date of delivery. Always stop and think if you need more than one record for each customer. So I start here and say, okay, do I need more than one record for each customer? Yes.
because each customer is going to have multiple deliveries. Do I need more than one season thing for each house? No. For each house, I just need average summer, average fall, average, and those are four different fields. Do I need a second customer on here? Since I made the rule you can't have more than one house, no.
If I hadn't made that rule, the answer would be yes, and I'm going to have to complicate it by keeping track of house code as my primary thing, as opposed to customer ID. Okay, but delivery, I'm definitely planning to make more than one delivery to the customer. And so since I'm making more than one delivery, what identifies it differently? Customer ID and the date of delivery. Couldn't use delivery date because I plan to deliver to more than one customer on any particular date. Okay, so I've got to combine the two. The number of gallons, presumably that's going to be duplicated, and price is definitely going to be duplicated. So that's the only thing that I can come up with that is unique. Okay, the second one I'm asking you to do is down below. Oh, enable editing, whatever. Does that give me yes? I have not yet adjusted to the latest versions.
Okay. Take a look at this. This is a payroll. I've got employee number, employee name, their salary, tax percent withheld, medical withheld, other deductions withheld. Projects the person is working on, and note they can be working on more than one project.
So, for example, at other jobs I have had, or you have to put in your hours broken down by the project that you were working on. And a lot of companies do that. So that if you submit hours, especially if they have outside contracts, they want to be able to, you know, they've put out a bid for a contract. And so any hours you spend on working on that project gets charged to that customer's account. And so they've got to keep track of how you spent your hours. So if you have a 40-hour work week, I spent 10 hours on project one, I spent 20 hours on project two, I spent 5 hours on project three, and 5 hours on project four, and I've accounted for my time, okay?
So that's what I'm saying here. The project the person is working on, note there can be more than one project. The name of the project, who manages the product, and the hours the employee worked on the project each time they worked on it. Okay. So, what do I need for tables for this?
Employee table.
That's the easy. So I have my employee table that basically includes that, right? Employee number, employee name, salary, and all of their deductions. Okay, so that includes that.
Okay, I can't put the project in there that they're working on because that would be repeating groups because I'm going to have them work on many projects maybe. Maybe somebody's working on only one project for all 40 hours. Maybe somebody puts in 2 hours on 20 projects. You know, I don't know how it's going to break down, but that's repeating groups, and I can't carry repeating groups and have the normal form. So I can't keep the project information on the employee table. Okay. So what's the next table that I need?
Projects table.
I need a projects table. So if I have a projects table, this is going to have the project number, the project name, and I think I wanted the manager, right? So that's the information about the project. And it would obviously have other things on it, such as the budget.
The project thing would probably have the budget, you know, how much we claimed we could do this for. And it would have the budget, it might have information about the hours or a bunch of other information on it, but I was keeping it simple, so I just got those things. Okay, what do I need for another table?
An hours table.
An hours table. So what's going to be on this table?
Employee number.
Project number.
Hours.
Yep. Notice I skipped a line, however. If I just had those things, and I have employee number 111, project number 100, and I put in 50 hours, or let's say 20 hours, and then next week I want to put in another record that is also employee 111, also project 100, and also 20 hours. Can't do it because it's a duplicate, huh?
So like a charge sheet.
That's right. I need some kind of a charge date. The date the person worked on it. Okay? Because I need to know what date. Because when I put them in a second time, I got to know what date. The date is going to be the difference. Because if somebody is working, has been assigned a major project, they're going to be working on that project every week. Now, the charge date could be done by day or it could be done by week. It depends on how you gather things. So this charge date could be this is the week of, and they put in Monday's date. It could be a number from 1 to 52 to put in the week that they work with. It could be putting it in for every single day. It depends on how they want to do it, but they've got to have something to keep. You know, a lot of people don't put in their charges for the day. They put them in for, by Friday when they leave, they've got to put in their charges for the week. So they don't account for themselves daily, they account for themselves weekly. And so that would then be the weekly charge. So this could be a daily or a weekly, depending on how the company wants to do it. Okay. What's the primary key on this one?
Charge date.
Keep going.
The first three. Employee number, final name, charge date.
Pardon me?
The first three.
Yep. That's my primary key. Because the employee working on that project on that date. And the only piece of data I have there is hours. And if you remember again the rules of third normal form, any piece of data that I put on has to relate to the entire key. And the hours relate to that employee working on that project for that particular time frame period. And so hours relates to all three. So that means this is constructed correctly for third normal form. Okay. Over here, I have real easy primary keys. The primary key is the employee number. The primary key is the project number. Okay, those are easy. And if you remember, we talked about bridge tables at one point when I looked at the normal form. And the example I gave you there was stars and movies, that I couldn't carry a movie on the star table because there would be many movies. I couldn't carry the star on the movie table because there were going to be many stars working on the movie. Well, that's the same thing here.
I can't carry the project on the employee table because the employee is presumably going to work on multiple projects. And I can't carry the employee on the project table because every project is going to have presumably multiple employees working on the project. So I can't carry project on employee, I can't carry employee on project. I need this becomes what we call a bridge table. Okay, so this is a bridge table that is bridging between the two of them and is carrying. The key thing about a bridge table is it carries the key to get to that one and the key to get to that one. Okay, so it carries the two things. It carries the employee number and the project number. And frequently, there is the possibility of duplication like we had here, so you have to add in a third field, which is the date. Okay. The employee in the movie one, we didn't star, movie and the star one, we didn't, because we only had to have the employee, the star once for the movie and the movie once for the star. But this one, if there's going to be multiple occasions of employee and project, then you have to have a third field to make them unique. And the third field we added was the charge date. Okay? And then any data that goes on that table has to relate to the entire key. Okay? So this one really gets into third normal form quite a lot, in that you have to set up the third table and all of that.
I have a question. Do
yeah.
you need the manager in the employee table as well as the project?
This is the manager of the project, not the employee's manager. Okay, if I want the employee's manager, I can put that here. You know, frequently in a large company, you have a boss, which is your manager, but the project has a manager too that's responsible for the project. Okay, so who's your boss? Well, when you're working on the project manager is certainly in charge of what you're doing on that project, but your manager is in charge of whether you get a day off or, you know, all if you get a raise and all that sort of stuff. Okay, so in the sense of manager, yes, I could definitely have the employee's manager over there if I wanted to carry that. And that would frequently be carried by department. So you say what department they're in, and then you link to the department and you find out who's the manager of that department. Okay, questions? Okay, so what I want you to do is to put together these tables. And you ought to put a couple of records on them, but not a whole lot, just so you can experiment like I did and see what's valid and what's not valid and experiment with it a little bit, because I asked you to do a little experimenting. So I said test some things. So basically, you've got to set up these tables. And then I want you to give them their primary keys, set up their primary keys, set up the foreign keys. And then I said I wanted you to try the different constraints. And so the check put in, but you only have to do that, you can pick one of them to do that on. You want to put in the check, the not null, and the unique. Okay? And again, I'm suggesting that especially with not null, you put that in prior to putting data in, because not null becomes problematic if you put in data first. And let's see. So I want you to put those up and test them. So I want you to go through and run through the primary key, the foreign key, test each of the constraints once at least. And then experiment a little, so put in enough data that you can, you know, see the fact that clearly I can't add an employee working on a project unless I have a project, that project. Okay, so if that project isn't up in the project table, I can't put the employee working on that project. Okay, because you can't work on a non-existing project. Or at least I'm not going to plan to pay you if you're working on a non-existent project. Okay, obviously I can't put in hours for an employee that doesn't exist. So the employee has to exist before I can put in hours for that employee. Okay, and the project has to exist before I can put in hours for that employee. So that's how you do some testing, is you try to put in some hours for an employee that doesn't exist, try to put in some hours for a project that doesn't exist, and that should kick you out if you set things up right. Okay, it shouldn't allow you to do that. Does that make sense? Okay. Where are we? I put in some more little notes about key projects. So the third thing down is just some notes on key questions. I said you can do the following with an alter. So I can alter the tables and then drop the primary key, drop a constraint, and drop a foreign key. You can use cascade to drop a primary key and all associated links. So in other words, if I drop a primary key, I also want to drop any foreign keys that key into it. And if I cascade, then it will drop them all. Okay, so there's one where I'm dropping the primary key. Okay, so I came down here and said all the tables A2 drop the primary key. So it's now dropped the primary key. It's no longer designated as a primary key. It hasn't dropped the field, it's just dropped the fact that it's a primary key. And most of these, and that's dropped the primary key cascade. These are basically notes that if you're having problems doing it, you might find the answer in there. So that I kind of added those as some notes. And actually there's one other thing that I have, and I will try to remember to put it up tonight, that is a good set of notes too. And I forgot to put that up. So I will do that. Okay, more on views. Okay. And again, a view gets created by taking data from one or more tables. And when you construct a view, it just saves the view, it doesn't save the data. Okay, a table saves data. A view saves the structure of the view, and every time it executes the view, it gets the data again. So that if you have added records, changed records, deleted records, they'll be reflected in the view. Okay, and you clearly don't want to start trying to keep view data, because think of the problem of it. Every time you add a record to a table, you'd have to go and look at all your views and see if you should be adding that information in there. And clearly that makes no sense. You want to keep one copy of the data and then a backup copy or two, but you want to have one copy of the data, and that's all you're going to have. Okay, so in this one, I just did my standard view.
here is what you can do if you want a change of view. You can say create or replace. So if I want to be able to change a view, I can say I want to create or replace, which means if the view doesn't exist, I will make it. If it does exist, I will change it. Okay, so this is a clause that is used a lot where I can say I want to create or replace a view. And anytime I want to change a view, that's how I do it. You know, otherwise, you had to go back and delete a view and write a new view if you wanted the view to have that particular name. You don't have to use the same names in a view that you use in the table. I'm not real clear on why I would want to do this, because to be honest, I don't want to have to keep track of what I called it here or what I called it there. But you can do this. I can say create a view and give everything a different name. And so the view now has everything with a different name. As I said, that seems to me like another way to complicate my life. But, you know, that's, it's possible to do if you want to do it. You can actually do an update in a view. And again, I think it's better to update a table than to go and update the view, and then it gets reflected. It actually gets reflected into the table. But it just somehow bothers me. I want, when I update, I would rather update the table. But you can do that. So I'm basically saying, I'm not sure why, but you can. Okay, I can also put a constraint on my view. I'm putting a constraint on the view that means that through the view I cannot change any costs, so it falls below the criteria for the view. And the view is that I want to see everything with an item cost greater than 15. And basically I am adding here a check which will not allow me to add something to the view that doesn't meet this. So I can't add something to the view that doesn't meet the criteria. Again, you avoid all this if you just change tables. And I personally think that's the way to go. You can also set up a read only, which I think is a nice thing to do. And that is, I can create a view with a read only, which means anybody can look, but don't touch. And when I'm dealing with end users, that can be a good thing. Don't let them at the table.
Yeah.
Let them at the view and have it as a read only view so they can look, but they can't touch. Okay? Y'all are nodding as if.
I work at a call center, so I deal with like managers, and they're always trying to mess up the reports we create. So we put everything real. It works great.
Yes. Basically, end users should not be trusted. And so you want to kind of keep things out of their domain, and you can. You can set up oracles such that they can't touch the tables. And that sort of thing. And then you can set up views that are read-only, which means you can look at them as much as you want, but you can't change the criteria. You got to go to IT if you want something changed. And integrity of the data is the worst problem that we encounter in IT. You know, you've got to keep the data clean. And that means you want to keep people that don't know what they're doing away from the data. Okay? And you can drop a view by just saying drop view. Okay. This one I would suggest you experiment with. So I'm going to actually say bring up Oracle. And I think it makes sense to experiment with this. And we probably, well, we might make it, but we will probably end up doing this next time. Now, remember, I will not be here next Thursday. Okay, I'm taking a personal day next Thursday and going to see my North Carolina grandchildren. So I'm going to be out, and Eric is going to be here, and he will be here all day. And my suggestion is, if you're behind in homework, it makes sense to come in, and then you can work with somebody else, so you can ask questions of somebody, and it's just a good place to try to get caught up. And if you can put in more hours, you're going to be here. We haven't actually figured out.
No.
But he's definitely going to be here till 2. Because you're going to cover my other two classes. So he's going to be here till 2, and so this room is going to be available. And basically you can come in and get some work done and try to get caught up next Thursday. Tuesday I will be here. And so we can finish up anything on this on Tuesday. I also should mention, and I told Eric about this Tuesday because I felt like I was getting one, I periodically get what's called an aura. It happens 2 or 3 times a year maybe, usually when I'm tired, where I had a grand mal seizure back in menopause. For some reason the hormones got screwed up and I had the seizure. And the result of that is I have these auras periodically. And the aura, I thought I was going to have one on Tuesday, which is why I mentioned it to him. The aura basically is I lose the ability to communicate for 5 or 10 minutes. And since my job is communicating, that's not a good thing to lose. But I only lose it for about 5 or 10 minutes. I'm fine. There's no problem. But sometimes they come on so fast, I can't say, oops, they're coming. So if I suddenly go quiet for 5 or 10 minutes, ignore me. Okay? It's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's just that I can't communicate. I can't communicate in writing. I can't communicate in speech. I just can't communicate. My brain goes click. Okay? It's usually back in 5 or 10 minutes. It happens 2 or 3 times a year. I used to always tell my classes, but it's so rare now that I forget to tell them. And so, as I said, if it happens, just ignore me. I may decide to leave the room. I may decide to stay. Don't ignore me. You've got work to do. Play a game. Whatever. Okay? So that's the deal there. Questions? okay. So now we're going on to this one. This is creating a sequence number. Okay, so I'm creating a sequence number here. And I said, create a sequence called ID number. Every time I run this, increment by 1. Start with 1,000. Max value is $19.99. No cache means that it will not keep it in memory. And no cycle means it will not restart it. So when I hit 1999, it will not restart at 1,000. Okay? So that's creating a sequence. Okay, now the sequence can be used. So I've got a table here, and I'm going to use that table to create the ID number. Okay. And the one I think that is easiest to use is this one down here. Okay. So I created a table called Test Sequence 1. And it has in it a department number, a department name, and a budget. And I have a sequence number that starts with 2, is incremented by 2, and goes up to 12. Okay, so this is the easiest one to look at. So I started out, and then I said, okay, insert into Test Sequence 1. And the value is department number, take the next value. Notice the sequence is called department number. So department number, take the next value. And then put in CIS 1500. So it put in, start with 2, it put in 2. CIS 1500. Then I said, okay, now insert into it the next value. And it put in 4, and it put in payroll, and it put in 10,000. And then I said, okay, insert the next value. And I came down and kept doing that, and I inserted up through 12. When I tried to insert one after I went through, because I had said the max is 12, then what it did is it said department number next val, personnel 6,000, can't do it. Sequence exceeds max value. So it couldn't put in 14. Okay? So I came down and I said, alter the sequence number, make the max value 1,000. It altered it, and I was able to add the next thing. So I would like you to go ahead and experiment with that. Create the table Test Sequence 1, and I think I put that up here. Well, it's the same as, let's see, Test Sequence 1. Did I create it? Huh. I guess I didn't. But Test Sequence 1 has those three fields in them, so make them any size you want. So create a table called Test Sequence 1, or you can call it anything you want. Put in a department number, put in a department name, and put in a budget. And don't add any records until you also create a sequence. Actually, I want to okay, come on, you can do it. Yes.
If you create a sequence, can you use that with any table?
Yes. And we'll go back and look at the notes a little bit more on Tuesday, but I basically wanted to get you to try it, and I was running out of time. But yes, you can use it for anything. Come on. Okay, let's see if I have a Test Sequence 1. Nope. Okay, so I've created a table, and I just put in a department number for 4 characters, a department name for 15, and a budget for 6. Okay, so I've now created that table called Test Sequence 1. Okay, so now I'm going to go in and create the sequence. Which is, I'm going to call it Department NO. And I'm going to say the same things it says here. Increment by 2. Start with 2. And a max value of, I'm going to say 6, because I want to get out of here sooner than and have it tell me no without doing a whole lot of inserts. Okay, so I said increment by 6. So now I have the sequence created. Okay? So now I can say insert into test sequence 1 values and department number, which is the name of the sequence. Okay, so that's, I put an underscore in that, department no. That's the name of the sequence. Department number, next val. And then put in CIS and 15,000. And one row has been created, and if I do a select asterisk from test sequence 1, I can see that it did indeed go in with a department 2, CIS 1500. Okay. So now I'm going to say insert into test sequence 1 values, and again department underscore number dot next val comma payroll and I created a row. Okay, let's see. I actually want to bring this down so I can... Okay, so there's my create table, there's my create sequence. I inserted 2 so far, and then I'm going to go down and insert a few more. Apparently I did accounts payable twice. Whatever. Insert into test sequence 1 values, and again I'm doing department number next val Okay, so now if I do a select asterisk from test sequence 1, I am seeing the 3 that I put in. So now I'm going to go and try to add inventory. So I'm going to say insert into test sequence 1, values, department number, next val, inventory, and 20,000. And it comes back and tells me that it can't do it because I've exceeded the maximum value. Okay. So what I have to do at that point is go in and make the change, which I have down here. Where I say alter department number, alter sequence. So I'm altering the sequence department number and I'm setting the max value at 20. Okay, and the sequence is altered. So now if I go back and try to do the insert, it created the row, and if I do a select asterisk from test sequence 1, I should see inventory as well. And then I'm going to run into a problem if I try to pass 20, because I have set the max now at 20. Okay. So give that a try. We've got 4 minutes, so I'm obviously not going to say anything more. So finish up giving that a try. They make the case up here that if you look, they have both a next value and a current value. Okay, so here, are the things that they have, and they have both a next value and a current value. If I come down here and try to do the current value, is the one, and the next value is the next thing coming up, and I mess up the sequence. I messed up the sequence by doing a select on next val, because if I use next val in anything other than to create a record, then it moves up one. It moves up to the next val, and now it's used that, so the next time it's going to add one more. So in other words, next val should only be used when you're doing an insert. Or if you use it just to peak, it's going to move up one. It's going to do the increment. And so anytime you use next val, it goes ahead and moves up one. And then when you try to use it, and I did down below, you will see that it skips. And so basically you just can't use that or it throws it off. And we'll look at this a little bit more. We're going to finish up, because this isn't a full class, there's only a little tiny bit left, and then we're going to start PLSQL. Okay. Now, the good news is you're not going to get an assignment next week because I'm not going to get far enough into next PLSQL. So do get caught up. Because PLSQL is programming language for SQL. And it's actually writing whole programs as opposed to...
where you can put the SQL inside the program and make the program actually handle multiple read files, handle multiple records, do other things like that. Okay, I'm done.